This was in the...
That stadium is named after Dick Wade.
This was in the 50s he managed to lose.
Yeah. Yeah, he managed...
In Wisconsin Rapids?
Sheboygan.
Yeah, he did that too.
And this is a guy, the kids say, Skip and me to glove. We'll go and see Joe and he would take it. He wouldn't give the kid the price. He's charging a high price. Smoke cigars and spit it all over your face when he talk to you. But he holds the record of, not anymore. For 1 year, I think he
was. He's the only guy that hit more than 60 twice.
67
right.
Or 69.
69 in Minneapolis and 63 in Baltimore.
Yeah. Remember Washington? I've only seen him play once. Outfielder with Minneapolis. He leave his bat to fly almost all the time, fly into the box seats. So what they did, they put a screen up there. When Washington come up to hit, they put the screen.
Halo the park to the hitter.
What is that ring from?
69 World Series.
It's not Houston.
No. Well, they never were in the World Series.
No, that's why I was wondering.
But the Mets were. See, I worked for the Mets for 19 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
In the minor leagues, when you were...
I roomed with a Hall of Famer, Rick Farrell.
Rick Farrell, yeah.
And I had Willie Stargell down in Roswell, New Mexico. Don't go down to Roswell. That's the end of the world. It's the end of the world right down there.
That's why I can't... There's a guy who played in the major leagues who's about 95 years old now, and that's where he lives.
Bauer.
Henry Brower?
B-A-U-E-R, I think it is. You see, they changed managers. They traded me for Kupski. I was at Dubuque. And I wouldn't hold still for that owner, what he didn't want to do. He didn't want to give the kids decent showers, scream for the towels. And I want the kids to have towels. I don't care how many. If you want to use 2, 3, that's up to you. And they were Pitcher was having a hell of a time with this guy anyway, so he took me out of there, sent me to Roswell. And Al Kupski came in to manage to do it. I had to take the helmets, the batting helmets, for practice, broke them open and show them in front of the grandstand so Pittsburgh could see it.
That was in the days before the million-dollar minor league team.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think his name was, what the hell, he's an Italian fellow. I can't think of his name. And he had a little, even the kids, he had a little restaurant, small, very small. And I just came to Dubuque and I said, isn't there a good restaurant in Dubuque? And he said, well, what do you want? I said, I want to get a decent steak or something. I'll buy you a steak. I'll make you a steak. So we went, I drove him to the grocery store and we bought a piece of meat about that long and about that wide. And he prepared it in his store. I mean, in the restaurant. He ate half of it. That's good. And I paid for it. Taylor, just tell him some stories from Mexico.
Oh, I'd rather hear some of yours. I think you got some good stories.
What are your scouting assignments now?
Well, I just got the northern part of Illinois.
Are you?
That's enough. I can't handle that.
You're looking at kids.
Oh, yeah. Won't tell you how many because he's here.
And what are you doing?
You've got four state area.
I've got Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota.
He's a supervisor for that.
How many years did you scout with the Mets before you left?
19.
Bob Johnson. Big Bob Johnson. You signed him, right?
Yeah, I signed Big Bob Johnson before the draft in 1965. And I had a fellow working for me who was a good scout, but he was not loyal to the organization. He was a claims adjuster for National Food Stores. And this Johnson, I saw this Johnson pitch, and I said, Freddie, you go out and see this guy pitch and call me right after the game. Let me know how many struck out. It wasn't quite a small town out west here. But anyway, it was under the league, Midwest League of some kind, semi-pro. So I went in and signed him the next day. Went to the Mets. He got in the motor and he was a bad boy. Got hit with a 55-gallon drum. Figured that one out. Some guy picked up a drum and hit him with it. He was had a motorcycle, and they wanted to operate in Williamsport. They wanted to operate on his leg and cut it off. He said, "You leave that leg alone. I'm going to pitch this year." He pitched about a month and a half later. Went to the big leagues with the Mets. And they traded him. The Mets had a better center fielder than A.G. Remember A.G. with the White Sox? Well, I had a lot to do with making the deal, not to getting it together. Well, Amos Otis, we drafted him for $8,000 from the Red Sox. He's a better ball player than A.G. He played 18 years in the major leagues. And we traded him and Johnson to Kansas City for third baseman. I forget what his name was, but he's a black fella. But he liked that needle. And they kept him 2 weeks, 2 months, and they sent him out, sent him somewhere by the league. Johnson was traded to Kansas City, and he was there, I guess he got about 5 years, maybe something like that.
It's in a World Series with the Pirates.
Yeah.
Back in the days before the draft, before the Major League Scouting Bureau, wasn't there more competition and skullduggery to get around the other scouts and the competition?
I like those days because you could go into a town and, they say beat the bushes. I had Iowa 1 year, and I signed three fellas out of Iowa in 1 year. Two of them were prospects, but they never made it. A fellow named Ryder, pitcher, come up with a bad back. And a fellow named Sturgeon out of Rockwell Falls. Wood Matthews, remember Wood Matthews? He was our scout director. He said, "Did you know that boy Sturgis drank beer?" Now there's a guy sat there and would drink those martinis, and he's worried about the ball player having beer. I said, "Yeah, I just bought him two cases of signing." And that father came out with potatoes. He gave me about four or five potatoes that were that big, and corn after I signed. Father brought the jug out. He said, "Let's have a drink before." I said, "I'll have a drink with you after you sign, not before." And then here I was on the road. What the hell was I going to do with all them vegetables? But you should never refuse.
Mm-hmm.
You refuse, they feel like you're insulted. So the first gas station I stopped on, I said to the fellow, I said, do you like vegetables? And he looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, I got some in the trunk that was given to me. You can have it if you want. So we went around and gave it to him. Well, I had the guy came out with a bag full of stuff like that. You know. And then the other kid's name was Binky. He won 12 the first year, lost 10, won. They moved him up and he won 14, lost 12, and then he and Stanky got in an argument. That was the end of it.
Mm.
It's the easiest thing in the world to release a guy.
Mm. Well, it's happened to some of the best of them, too.
Oh, I can tell you a lot of guys that were released. Joe Cronin was released by Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Shortstop with the Cubs, what was his name? Cricket Head. He always popped off. He was released by Pittsburgh on account of a $12 bill. They didn't want to pay his trunk bill.
No. How far back are we going now?
Well, I don't remember, but Hartnett was still there. But anyway, remember Tony Oliva?
Sure.
He was released. And he's broke. And so they gave him a job being a clubhouse boy, sweeping out the clubhouse and everything like that. First baseman got hurt. They said, Tony, you can play first base. He said, you know what happened to Tony Oliva? He was a hell of a hitter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened to him. There's a lot of guys who released him that made it.
Yeah, George Kell is one of them, too. The Dodgers released him.
Did they? Mm-hmm. I don't remember that.
Yeah,
he was
told
a good ball player. Yeah.
Did you have a rating system that you used when you were looking at these prospects?
What kind of rating are you talking about?
Well, I'm trying to find out what you had. Did you have like a blue chip, red chip, white chip, 1 through 5?
What good is chips if a guy can't play?
Okay. Well, what were you looking for then when you scouted?
There's four things a fellow should be able to do. But you don't find a complete ball player all the time. Like field, throw, run, and hit. Sometimes you can do one of those things real well, but it all depends upon which one it is.
Mm.
If he can hit, they'll find his prop for him, won't they, Marty?
Definitely. That's how many guys we can hit up there right now.
You think then it's easier to teach?
You don't have to make $2 million.
When you're born, you're a 230 hitter. You know that?
Well, I wasn't, but I'll take your word for it.
If you're in the cradle, you're a 230 hitter.
So the idea is that it's easier.
$800,000 easily then.
It's easier to teach fielding than it is hitting. Hitting is more a natural gift.
Well, if you haven't got the agility, you can't be a good fielder. Good hands. You might find a guy with a good arm, but he isn't a good fielder. And you got some guys in the big leagues that have a good arm. We got a guy, Cometti. He's got some power, but he almost hits about 230, 240. And he can run. Not a bad fielder.
What do you mean, Caminiti?
Well, Biggio. Biggio can run and he can hit, but he can't catch.
Hmm. What do you do with him?
Well, they're going to put him on second base this year.
Well, in the American League, you'd make him the DH. But not the solution. The Astros. What would you look for in a pitcher? I suppose a fastball first? Uh-huh. How important is control for a 17 or 18-year-old prospect?
He's got it. You had a couple of fellas here last year, didn't you? And Nowicki, the fellow at Hazelcrest.
Gurecki at Oak Forest?
Gurecki, yeah. Good curveball?
Good curveball. And
pretty good control, too.
Yeah, a lot better than most kids at that age that have a good breaking ball. You can get it over.
But I can't see giving these kids right out of high school, big money to sign. What, that Von Poppel down in Austin, Texas, got $1.2 million.
Well, I can't see giving Jerome Walton $1 million raises either.
Yeah, you know, well, they're doing it.
The people in Atlanta are still upset about Van
where,
Poppel.
That's where the remarks that I made come in, where the Marvin Miller made got the union. Hell, it's the only industry where they tell you what to do. The employee tell you what to do, and you got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only industry. There's nothing else like it.
Yeah. Yogi Berra said when I was playing, the players were dumb. Now the owners
about. See what happened against fellow in Pittsburgh. He signed Lavalier and the pitcher for big money. And before that, was it Chandler? The kid from Simeon, the third baseman?
Chamberlain.
West Chamberlain?
Yeah. He didn't protect him, the general manager. Philadelphia took him for waiver price, and just a month ago they fired the general manager because he signed these guys for big money, $3 million, $2 million. It's hard to understand.
Well, you're as a scout now. When you list the guy as a number one draft pick, you're in effect putting that kind of price tag on them, aren't you? Because they're all going to say, well, we want what the other number one guys are getting.
Scout don't put the price. When it gets up to big money, you don't even mention money. The office does it.
Yeah, but you, by putting the number one tag on them, are in effect putting that price tag on them.
If he's taking number one. Okay, you know, a lot of it is dictated just by where the player falls into the draft. If the player falls, let's say, in the first five picks of the draft, well, then you're going to have pretty big money to be dealing with.
Did you know
let's say the player is a 26th pick in the first round. Well, you could say, well, hey, you're one pick away from being a second-round pick.
Okay, so, you're with Houston, you know, money, and they have a high pick.
We have first pick this year.
Okay. So the recommendations of the scouts, is going to have a lot of weight in who that first pick winds up being.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you're not going to, you won't have anything to say about $1 million to sign a guy for $1 million.
No, but when you're saying this is the guy we should draft number one, that guy is...
They'll have the cross-checkers come in and...
They'll
X-ray him.
Especially, you know, the higher the pick, the more people you're going to have in to see him.
Right.
And they're going to compare reports, you know, on that player.
But if I'm not
if everybody's got a favorable report, then if he happens to be ready, you know, to fall into that slot where you're drafting, then you'll take him. But like Walter was saying, you know, the guy where you guys had the number one pick last year overall in a draft or what?
No, we had I don't know how many.
But
seven,
it was up there.
Seven picks the first two rounds.
Okay, but anyhow, you're going to get as you've got people going around. You know, cross checkers. Have you ever heard that term? Okay, you got cross checkers going around the country, and they're going to make sure that as many cross checkers as possible see that player. Plus the scouting director, plus the general manager. As many people as possible. Now, if you've got all of these people in there, it's not only on his head or my head. You know, okay, we're like the bird dog in that situation. We say, well, you know, you better get in there and see this guy because he's pretty darn good. Now, if everybody else agrees with you, you know, basically it's been a team decision.
Now, does it enter into it? Does anybody talk to the guy to find out if he may say, well, suppose I'm that guy, and I'm looking, I see what Ben McDonald got and Von Poppel got and all these guys. Do you try to find out for me what I'm expecting, what I'm going to want to sign for, and maybe that would turn you off me?
Well, basically, okay, our job, number one, is to be able to recognize if they have the talent.
Okay.
Okay, now we've done that. Okay, secondly, they want us to try to get to know the player, at least to find out if there is a reasonable chance that we can sign him. Because we don't want to draft a player up that high and then not be able to sign him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you make some type of contact with the player, and whatever way is best for the scout, you try to ask them.
They even cry racist statue. Remember the New
What's
York?
That?
They cry racist up in New York when they're Taylor.
Oh, yeah. His mother wanted to, said that we're not going to sign for less than $1,250,000 or something. Yeah.
Right. Well, anyhow, I mean, basically the scouts are trying to weed that out. Now it's up to the other people that come in and see this player. The scout doesn't make a decision on the money whatsoever. The scout decides, hey, this guy can play. Now, if he's a first-round pick, let's say, all these other people have seen the player also. Now it's up to the general manager and the scouting director to get their heads together and say, well, okay, now this guy is a reasonably signable player. You know, he's a junior in college, let's say. If we go in and give him a fair offer for what the market demands, somewhere in there, it may take a while, it may take 2, 3, 4, 5 days, may take a week or so, but we'll get it done. We'll haggle back and forth until we finally can get this thing done. You also try to figure out if there's possibly an agent in the background that your office is going to be dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's important nowadays, that maybe wasn't in play maybe 10 or 15 years ago in scouting, because you didn't have the agents dealing with the free agent players that were out of high school or junior college or college. So that's one thing that, like I said, it's really important to find out, because different agents deal differently. There's some agents that their whole game is to let the whole summer run out and wait till the very last day or 2 or 3 days and push it as far as you can push it before they're going to, you know, either give in to what the ball club is offering, or maybe suggest to the player, especially if he's a high school player, go on to college.
See, once
other agents deal differently. You know, maybe they're going to want to try to get it done sooner.
They stay in the background a lot of times. They advise. You see, they're supposed to be registered in the commissioner's office. And in the state of Illinois, an agent is supposed to be registered down in Springfield. You never knew that, did you?
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you another thing. An 18-year-old boy in the state of Illinois can sign a contract for himself. Up in Minnesota, if they draft a player, you got to wait 7 days before you can sign it. See, everything is in the boy's favor. Everything. We got a good college scholarship, and baseball is not against education, for sure. They want you to go to school, and that scholarship can be used. He can play 10 years, and if he hasn't used a scholarship, it's still good.
As long as he plays. It's an excellent program.
See, that's why what we talked about before, that draft hole for 4 or 5 years would not be in the kid's interest.
Well, what is?
Well, I mean, you're talking about all these things are in the boy's interest.
Yeah. See, I don't.
That would not be.
It doesn't bother me one way or the other.
Yeah.
Well, it would be in his interest, because he can get 1, 2, 3, or 4 years of college, and he still would have the offer that Marty gave him.
Yeah, but to tell him that he cannot sign with anybody else for 5 years.
Oh, yeah, it's a monopoly.
Yeah.
That's all. You see, nobody has challenged the draft.
Well, it hadn't come in yet.
Well, wait a minute. The draft's been in since 1965.
No, I say that five-year hold idea hasn't been passed.
That hasn't come in.
Yeah.
But see, nobody has challenged the draft since 1965.
No, because you can't tie him up for too long.
Well, you can tie a junior college boy up for 2 years. You draft him and hold him. Get him to sign that slip. The redraft slip. So you have the same rights as the other 25 clubs that are drafting.
Oh, same rights. That's okay. No, no more rights.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, in that way you can follow a kid in junior college, which you might, if this goes through, you might be able to do that in four-year college.
You know what he's talking about?
Well, yeah, let's say what we were talking about before.
Draft the kid out of high school, and if he doesn't choose to sign at that time, but he goes to a junior college, then you can still watch him progress in junior college that particular year. And if you want to try to sign him, if you feel, hey, he's looking good, let's try to sign him, you can sign him before the next draft comes into play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a certain amount of time.
But not after.
No, right, but it's still, at least that gives you a second chance to take a look at him and see how he progresses. Mm-hmm. And a lot of clubs, draft accordingly to that.
And then
in fact,
the
Houston
agent
is probably the biggest club to do that.
Don't say that again.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that as a slam. I'm just saying. We draft players like that.
We drafted 100 players last June. Where are you going to put them? You know what that entails? Just one player. Say I draft Matt Marty, and we're not going to sign him. So what we do? We got to offer him a contract within 15 days. See. But you try to get them to go to school and sign that redraft slip. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can watch him.
And what happens if he doesn't sign that slip?
Well, you're out.
Then he's a free agent. If he doesn't want to sign with you,
he
doesn't sign the slip.
He's a free agent before you even present the slip. You've drafted him. Yeah. Now you got 15 days to offer him a contract. If you don't offer him a contract within 15 days, he's a free agent.
And if you offer it to him and he doesn't want to sign it?
You don't sign it. So.
Then what's his status?
He's free.
Well,
until school starts. Once he goes to school, you can't sign him.
See, isn't there a rule that, let's say you draft a player. And you go in and offer him a contract. There's a formal piece of paper that we have called acknowledgement of negotiations. Okay, and it says this is not a contract, but this is just to prove that scout, representative of the such and such a ball club has offered a contract to such and such a player, and then the player is supposed to sign it. Now, technically, that has to be signed within, 15 or 30 days? It might be 15. Okay, anyhow, if it's not signed, then that player can be
signed with anybody.
Dealt with anybody. He's just open market. Anybody can come up and offer him a contract right then and there on the spot.
Okay.
But then again, if you're coming in there in good faith and you're offering somebody a contract and they say no, well, then the next best thing you better do is you better come in there with somebody else, a representative from the ball club for legal reasons to just say, yes, we have proof that we did offer you a contract, so you cannot say, even though you don't want to sign this piece of paper, you have to abide by the rule.
It was a lot more fun beating the bushes without all that.
Well, I think so. I liked Iowa. I only had it 1 year. You could drive down the highway, and see lights. You were going to see a ball game.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that you beat the bushes.
Yeah. Is it possible today to find the undiscovered gem anywhere, or is it too well computerized?
I wish I had the list here. Bonilla was never drafted.
They're still players.
They say Bonilla was never drafted, but let me tell you something. Some scout had his finger in there to get him signed, didn't he? No doubt about it. And Quisenberry, another one. They had about 8 or 10 on this list. But it's not always scout. It's a lot of times it's the scout director, because he's one that makes up the Masters. And he might not like him. In fact, he probably shouldn't even be scouting because he's doing those Zach Samoa now.
Yeah, that happens. It sure does.
Happens. It's happening every day now.
Yeah.
There's still some players that slip through.
Sure.
But sure. Even sometimes there might be players that...
Not because they weren't seen. It's because somebody up higher, they all decided not to draft.
Well, there's some players that'll slip through because somebody just happened to get lucky and found a player in some area that nobody else got to, you know.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was a player that everybody saw, and everybody said, no way, that guy's a prospect.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, somebody took a chance and put the guy in, and that guy happened to make it. So, I mean, it can happen. It still happens. I mean, there's a lot of times, you're talking about the Major League Scouting Bureau. I know a lot of guys that work for the Bureau that I like personally, they're good guys. The concept of the Scouting Bureau, I don't care for, because I feel if I'm doing my job in my territory, I don't need any help. You know, and finding players.
Yeah, there are some clubs that don't want to belong to it.
Right. But,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that.
What was the commissioner's name?
Oberon.
Oberon. He made them all join.
Right.
Cost $116,000 or $120,000 to belong to them.
Are they all still required to belong to it?
Yes.
But not required to use it.
Well, no, but I mean, if you're paying for something, you might as well try to get whatever information out of it as possible.
How young a player do you start looking at? I mean, junior in high school, is that about the youngest you go, or these?
Probably, I would say, the way I would look at it is like in summer ball, looking at prospects in summer ball, like Colt League. Okay, Colt League is...
Yeah, give me a little more.
What is Colt League? About 14, 15, 16-year-olds? Okay. That's about as young as you go. Maybe just a little bit. You know, Pony League. Whatever would be that, maybe freshman, sophomore year of high school. If it's a pretty good brand of ball, then you try to get to tournaments. That's the best place. You know, you get to a tournament where you see maybe eight teams. You see the tournament in a day or two.
You might see eight clubs in one day.
And you might see two, three, four kids on there, and you say, hey, this kid's worth a follow. This kid looks like a decent athlete. He's worth a follow. And then you just, you know, you stay in contact with whatever school he's at and just
get a
schedule every year. And just if you get a chance to see him, fine. You know, but you... just try to keep tabs on.
Is there any rule against you talking to a player of any age?
No.
You could talk to them at any as young as.
Oh, coach might not like it.
Yeah.
You keep but
if you do your work, you find them. Believe me.
You
might go out to see Jim. You won't like Jim, but you might see Frank, and you like Frank.
A good example is, so this is the way I try to do it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're very kind.
Is to just make sure you always take a lineup. When you take a lineup, make sure it's as complete as possible to get, you know, the year in school that the player is, where he goes to school, and then if I'm at a high school game and I see, if I'm watching infield, I can't tell one guy from another out there watching infield. Everybody kind of looks the same. But now if I'm looking here, and here's a kid, this is a sophomore. How does he look out there? Now I'm watching infield, maybe he's got a good arm. Maybe he's got good action, something about him that I might like. Now he may not do anything in that ball game, but I say, hey, he's a sophomore, he's going to grow, there's a chance he could develop. Bingo. Now that kid, I'm going to put a little follow on him and make sure that I see that kid in the summer or in the fall or next spring And the, you know, the more you do that, you know, you're paying attention. Like Walter said, you pay attention to every single kid. And you may be out there looking at the kid, the senior on that ball club. He's the big star on the team. And you say, well, no, I don't like him as a prospect, but here's a sophomore here, or here's a junior
reason
here.
Reason to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that, and if you really, if you do your work, like Walter said, and you take your lineup. You know, I feel like I'm a methodical person, so I'll take a lineup and I'll just kind of fill in my boxes on my card, you know, the tools or whatever, and just try to piece it together. And after a while, it's like, gee, that guy's worth keeping tabs on. Then after a while, you've got all your game cards here at the end of the year, and you start to file through your game cards. Oh yeah, here's a kid. He's not bad. And then, you know, when you see the game card, if you've written something down, at least for me, it jars your memory, you know, where you say, oh yeah, now I remember him. Whereas before you looked at your card, you can't really remember all of the details of what you saw that day, and then all of a sudden it clicks in.
I'm kind of inferring an answer to a question I had. There's a tremendous amount of information, obviously. I was going to ask, do computers enter into it all? Do you have the personal computers to put things in, or is it all just handwritten notes?
No, it's just all handwritten.
Handwritten notes and memory, huh?
Well, yeah, right.
You got the gun, too, but what does the gun do for you? I'm asking you, what does the gun do for you?
Shows you how fast he throws.
Exactly.
That's all.
It's the only thing. It won't tell you what the control or anything like that is.
There's something where if you well, I guess there are a lot of different ways to make mistakes, but
that's for sure.
Yeah,
find a new one every day.
But what is it that the things that you can't see, that you can't write down? How do you try to detect what's inside?
Well, you can tell if the guy's got a lot of moxie. What he does, his actions.
How he reacts to situations in a game.
If he'll slide into somebody and break up double play and all that kind of stuff. See? Or if he's knocked out of the box by a fastball, see how he comes back in the next couple of pitches.
Or if you see a kid in a pressure situation, that's why it's good to maybe see if you get a chance to match two high school kids up that are both pretty good, see how they compete against each other. Let's say one of them's a pitcher and another is a positional player. You know, not necessarily the results, but look in the way, you know, they compete against each other. I look at the, and I'm sure Walter does too, I look at the kid in the dugout, the way he acts with his teammates, the way he reacts to situations. I'll tell you a situation. There was a kid, he was a catcher a couple of years ago from a team here on the south side, and he was being very highly scouted. And he was one of these rah-rah guys. Oh, really rah-rah, almost to the point where it made you sick of your stomach, you know what I mean? Because to me, I saw right through it. I thought it was a bunch of baloney. Anyhow, he's out there, rah, 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 and this and that during infield practice, and the game starts. Yeah, rah, rah. Comes up there in the first inning, got bases loaded, nobody out, pops up. He come back to the dugout, and he sat there just like this. Now, to me, if you're a rah, rah guy, then you better be cheering for your teammates and say, hey, pick me up, come on, next guy up there, get that hit, I want to win the game. You're not going to go into a shell and pout or whatever it is. You know, and to me, that just was a, that was all a real negative,
inward.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That ain't saying, you know, he still may play in the big leagues, but
what but I'm that's something to overcome.
That's something and it's something that I certainly didn't like seeing. And again, like you're asking about intangibles, you just look at a player and try to think what you think human nature is. Okay, what's your opinion of a guy that's a tough guy? What's your opinion of a guy that's soft? What's your opinion of a guy that when the chips are down, he's going to be the guy that's going to be there for you. Who's going to be the guy that's going to turn his back? And whatever you have seen through your life or my personal situation, I try to look at that. You know, maybe you'll never see that. Maybe
also,
you'll never get a chance. But
yeah. I would like to see the father and mother. See if they're big people, strong people. See if advertise enters in.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Well, did the fellow from Michigan ever sign that fellow that was so heavy? Can you remember his family was heavy?
The big junior college pitcher?
Yeah, from Michigan University, I think it was. Or no, Lake Michigan University.
Yeah, the junior college.
Did he ever sign?
I didn't have Michigan, but I had heard that he was in your pitching with that team.
Yeah, well, I was. They had two or three fellas come in. Hal Newhouser had some fellas come in and watch him.
You know, a lot of times, though, you sign a kid. The thing is, you're running around every day just trying to see as many players as possible, and it's pretty difficult to really get to know a kid. Whereas, from what I understand, back before the draft, the scout really got to know the kid in the turns. Whereas now, okay, I've signed kids, and then I've met them, maybe really got to talk to them and meet them maybe after they play their first year, and I just go, holy cow, you know, what did I do, you know? Or you might say, hey, you know, this kid's a tougher kid than I thought he was, or something like that. But you know, I'll tell you what, I was thinking about one of the kids I just signed last year that just fits into that category, and I just say, oh, man.
Do the clubs still have camps where they invite youngsters to come and try out in front of scouts, or is it always you going to them?
Well, there's certain rules, like if there's American Legion, they have to get permission. See. And I think they have to get permission from the high school, too, during spring trip, isn't it?
During the season, you can't touch, the scout can't work a kid out, you know, in either high school or college or junior college. Unless they get permission from the coach.
I think the best rule there is in baseball is that a boy has to graduate or his class has to graduate before he's eligible for the draft. Plus, if there's a hardship case, like the family needs money and the boy has to go to work or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's also people like me and like Marty that have to take advantage of that. Because you have to keep the expenses down for the club.
Yeah, that's another thing.
And if you go in and offer 5, they want 10. If you offer 10, they want 20.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. Oh, yeah.
Can you recall any any real disappointments? Guys you thought would make it, to look like as good as any you saw that didn't?
Well, the draft takes care of disappointments. You might be disappointed you didn't get them in the draft. Yeah.
No, I mean players with prospects who turned out to be disappointed.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of them.
I don't want to say any names, but there's a few that I can think of.
Mm.
I mean, players that, you know, you saw the tools were there.
Mm-hmm.
And not just average tools, they were plus tools. And all of a sudden, you know, I see this kid in high school, and I see him 2 years later in a Midwest league, and I'm just shaking my head. And I didn't sign the kid, but I mean, I knew that this kid was, man, this kid was number one on my list.
Does it look like a mental change or a physical change for him?
Well, it's got to be, you know, in this case, it had to be a mental thing. Mm-hmm. Because that nothing happened to him that could have...
No broken leg or anything like that.
You're taken away from his tools.
Did they sign for a large amount of money, you recall?
And you think that might make him less hungry, huh?
Oh,
no.
No? No, I don't think that was it.
Not especially at the beginning.
I don't think that had anything to do with it. I just, like I said, you don't know what is inside that kid all the time, and... Some of them can't compete. That's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Like the pitchers that can blow by a fastball by every kid in high school, but when he gets into a professional league,
you like to see a some kid kids that's after got the first or second day they would come in and say,
"I want to go home." It doesn't mean he knows anything about pitching.
Well, I can't compete against
just because he can throw it by those guys.
They knew their own. If he's getting capacities.
His ears pinned back a little bit, he's still
out there
competing.
A lot of times.
That shows you something. But, you know, like you said, okay, he's waltzing.
Now it's the old story about, Mom, I'm coming home soon. They start throwing curveballs.
The thing about sports is you've got to beat somebody out of the
challenge. Because ultimately he's going to get that challenge in pro ball.
That's where he first gets it. Ben McDonald is an example. Ben McDonald blew everybody by. Ben McDonald did not blow everybody by in a minor league, in a professional basis.
Well, he learned how to pitch.
He had
the ability.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is...
He still learned.
I'm just saying, you want to see, if he does get some situation where he is struggling, if you can see that as a free agent and see how he's going to compete, then you can say, hey, okay, he's going to have to learn this or this or this. But he's got the insides to take care of business. When he finally gets everything in place, he's going to be there.
I imagine you run into some surprises, too, of guys that you pretty well wrote off, and all of a sudden they're world beaters someplace.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too many. Especially if
they go
to college
every year.
Your school, they can develop.
Yeah.
What are the biggest adjustments a player has to make from, say, high school to minor league, to organize ball?
Just save being away from home, probably.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, huh? Just like when you go into the service, I guess.
Another thing is a wood bat.
Yeah. Are the majors going to do anything about that? Like, well, about providing wood bats to the kids?
I couldn't answer that, but I would say right now, no.
Does it make it harder for you to judge a hitter when they're using an aluminum bat?
To some extent, that's all they use. I think you can tell when a player's, let's say, okay.
When the swing is right.
Aluminum bat swing is a guy that's inside out with his swing because he doesn't get the barrel there quick enough. And you can pretty well tell if a guy's got an inside out swing. And if he does, then more than likely he's going to really struggle to throw a ball because they're going to start throwing him on the inner part of the plate and jamming him. And then once they start to, he worries about getting jammed. Then they start throwing him away where he hits it off the end of the bat and completely throws it.
What about the young pitchers who started, who've grown up throwing to other kids with aluminum bats? Do they have to make a change when they start throwing against players who are using wooden bats? I mean, is the bats used differently?
That's a good point. I know Richie Klaus has mentioned this. Richie's been in baseball over 50 years. And pitchers pitching to the inner part of the plate, challenging hitters.
Yeah.
Pitchers don't seem to do that as much nowadays. As